Radiotopia.
You didn't hear this from me, but Normal Gossip is back for a sixth season. Join host Kelsey McKinney as she shares the juiciest gossip from the real world. Each episode, she's joined by a special guest, and you might recognize a couple this season from the Radiotopia universe. Normal Gossip, named one of the best podcasts of the year by Time Magazine and Vulture, is out now on all your favorite podcast platforms. New episodes starting April 17th.
I haven't had a glass of milk since I was 14 years old, and I will never have another glass of milk again in my life because the trauma of what happened when I was a little girl.
As the host of the true crime podcast, Criminal, Phoebe Judge has a knack for telling stories about the complicated ways people navigate the laws of the land.
So the rest of your family thinks that you have the capability to kill again?
Yes, indeed. They really do. And they don't believe that I have really turned a new leaf.
Which makes sense, because she grew up navigating a lot of rules herself.
Dinner would be over, and we could not get up until we finished this glass of milk. So the milk would kind of start to get warm, which would mean that we'd start adding ice cubes to it. And so we'd just kind of be sitting there staring at each other with glasses of milk with ice cubes in it, which just made it worse. Like food, you could kind of like stuff it in your napkin underneath the table. But like, what are you going to do? Like dump a glass of milk, you know, on the ground? I grew up in one of those houses where there was nothing good. There was no soda pop. There was no chips. We didn't have TV and we didn't have like dessert. I mean, when we're little, we're told by our parents, this is good, this is bad, right, wrong, do this. If you don't do this, you're going to be in trouble.
Today, Phoebe knows a lot about people who get in trouble.
The man who died six times, was it something like you took that first shot and you just couldn't stop?
Yes, when I shot the first shot, it felt like I could not stop. And because I kept shooting until the bullets ran out of that gun.
Anyone who says to you, well, I've never committed a crime, is a liar. You know, I mean, they're just a liar. I mean, we've all commit crimes. It's just the scale in which we're going to commit these crimes. What is it that pushes someone out of that line and kind of says, well, screw it, I'm going to take things into my own hands?
It's a question that she began trying to answer for herself at an early age.
We could only watch 1 hour of TV a week, and it was ER at 9 o'clock on Thursday nights. And that was it. I mean, they were really strict about it. But, you know, I was never going to just follow that rule. So what we would do is we would turn the TV on, and we would sit so close to the television so that my parents couldn't hear if they walked in. And I would constantly be putting my hand on the side of the TV to see if it was getting hot, because I thought that if my parents came in and were able to feel the heat of the TV, they would know that we had been watching. So I was like constantly pushing that line there.
All of that line pushing gave her a unique outlook on both kids and crime.
Kids make better versions of criminals than adults. I think that children should try to get away with whatever they can, for as long as they can. I think that it teaches a kid a lot. You know, that's what makes a good scammer. How do you slip by unnoticed so that your whole operation doesn't get shut down before it starts? Now when my niece scams me, I'm kind of delighted by it. I was with her a while ago and, you know, I was having a hard day. She was 5 years old and I said, you know, listen, Madeline, you know, I'm going to really need you to take it easy on me today. And she looked at me and she said, you take it easy on me, I'll take it easy on you. And I thought that was just like the greatest thing. It was just like this child asserting their own power of like, I can make your life miserable too. And understanding that.
From PRX and Radiotopia, this is the Mortified Podcast. I'm Dave. And today on the show, Confessions of a Kid Criminal. Acclaimed podcaster and soon-to-be-acclaimed childhood felon, Phoebe Judge takes us on a journey into the mind of kids who cross the line between right and wrong. It's the first installment of our two-part series on kids and crime, where we find out if crime pays. Do you still get an allowance?
Dear Diary.
Sixth grade.
February 14th.
1991.
I am really depressed.
How could she break up with me?
Mom, you can't read this.
My name is Sasha Rothschild, and I was a very neurotic child.
I have kept a diary since I could first write, and one of the things I put in my diary were lists.
When Sasha Rothschild was young, she was the good girl. Smart, studious, organized.
I would lay out my clothes the night before exactly what I was going to wear. My socks had to match my scrunchie, and everything had to be sort of very well organized and curated. So then in eighth grade, I totally became a bad girl. I think in my life at that time, as many teenage girls feel, I felt powerless. I was powerless with my parents who just didn't understand. I was powerless at school. The whole social construct was not working in my favor. But I could like be the master of my fate by shoplifting. In that small moment of stealing a scrunchie, I was in charge of my life.
But I still felt compelled to make lists of the things I was doing, so I became the anal retentive delinquent. I started a shoplifting diary. My shoplifting diary. I have started shoplifting and I love it. You get such a head rush and it's so exciting, almost as good as drugs. Well, I have decided to write down everything I steal every day. And at the end of each month, I will try to figure out how much all my shit is worth. Hope I don't get caught. So I'll just read you a couple days. September 14th, one large Subway drink. Criminal mastermind. One pack of bazooka gum. September 15th, I started to get a little more bold. One hair scrunchie, one belt, one aerobics top. September 17th, one bottle of sunscreen, one earring. I don't know if that was one pair of earrings or just literally one earring. And September 20th, one sweater, one tank top, and one 14-karat gold bracelet, which was my major score.
Like many kids, Sasha justified her behavior by developing a code of ethics, which is honestly something we're all guilty of doing. But kids are masterful at it.
It's not nice to shoplift. I kind of had this rule that I would never steal from anyone's house. I knew that stealing from someone's house was like stealing, whereas shoplifting sort of seemed to me at the time like a victimless crime because it was a store. It was like an entity that was cold and impersonal.
While Sasha considered homes to be off limits growing up, Phoebe actually preferred them.
When I was a little girl, probably from the ages of 7 to 12, I would take money from my father. Not a lot of money, but money enough to like support my candy habit. And he always kept cash in his pants. He always did the same thing. He would take his pants off. The money would be in the pants. It would be on the chair. And the next morning he would go to take a shower and he would not have switched the money to the next, to the other pair of pants. And so I would sneak in and I would take the amount of money that I would take would be based on not only the amount of cash he had, and that's like, did he have $80 or $90 or $60, but also the width of the wad of cash that he had. So I knew that, you know, I had to take into account if I took $5 and he had $90, that might not, he might not recognize that, as opposed to if he had $60, I might take, you know, $2. But also, it depended on if he had a lot of ones or a lot of fives. It would like, I'd be like, well, I can't take too many ones because then when he puts his hand on the wad of cash, he'll see that it's thinner. That was even more important than the amount of money. I mean, I remember thinking a lot like, this is the man who's also putting food on the table and paying for my clothes. And so I don't want to, I'm not trying to really rip him off, but you know, we all need the Swedish fish, always. Red Swedish fish. I gotta have my fix too.
Over time, Phoebe grew ambitious and began to expand her turf.
I decided to take my stealing outside of the house, away from my father's money. When I was again 7 or 8, I decided to steal a pack of gum from the supermarket, and that changed everything. It was a pack of Chiclets gum, the fruit flavored variety, because I think that if we ever did have gum in the house, it probably was mint gum. And I stole it. I mean, I just put it in my pocket, no trouble. And I got out of the supermarket and my sister, Chloe, 13 months younger than me, probably smelled my breath or saw the color of my tongue and said, I remember so clearly, she said, if I tell mom and dad that you stole that pack of gum, you're going to jail.
As it turned out, Phoebe wasn't the only one in the family who could run an operation.
And so for the next 3 months, Chloe blackmailed me in the most wonderfully manipulative way. I mean, she was a professional blackmailer. I've never seen anything like it. I was so terrified. I mean, I really did believe that I was going to go to jail. And then the pinnacle, kind of, we were on vacation and there was this road race. And I said to my parents, I'd like to run, you know, in it. And this was not a kid's race, it was an adult race. And I ran this race and I, you know, was doing really well. And I came across the finish line, this little blonde hair braided girl. And they handed me this trophy and I was so proud of it. And my parents were so proud and everyone was smiling. And all of a sudden, I see Chloe sidle up to me, very sly, you know, not quick, just like smooth. And she put out her hand and she said, hand it over. And that was it. Like I had to, just had to hand the trophy. Eventually I broke and I said to Chloe, just tell him. I don't care. Just tell them. You know, I had reached my breaking point of blackmail. I mean, the thrill was gone. She had wrung me for everything that she could. She just saw that I was some weak, pathetic rag on the ground. And she didn't even care to tell my parents. I don't think I ever told my parents.
The best criminal masterminds always evade capture. Phoebe never got busted by mom and dad, and part of that was luck, but most of it was skill, a skill that Phoebe believes actually helped shape her career.
I spent so much of my youth listening, acutely listening for my parents' footsteps coming up the stairs or down the hall or into the TV room that I... Maybe that's why I'm in the business that I'm in today, because I became a very good listener because I was constantly waiting to hear them come around the corner and trying to do my business, be that turn the television on or take a five from my father's pants slyly. And I also, like, I can move pretty quietly. That sounds crazy to say that. Like, I'm 33 years old and I still, like, practice moving from one room to the other, like, with making no noise. Yeah, I could be there with you right now lurking. You wouldn't know.
When it comes to kids in crime, the five-finger discount is usually the first offense, but it's not always the last. Brooke Pilafont discovered that slippery slope firsthand. As a kid in Texas, she wanted nothing more than to be the life of the party.
So when I turned 13, I decided to rebel. And that meant dyeing my hair blue. It meant finding some punk rock clothes. And it meant finding a whole new group of friends so that they could also be rebels with me. Anyway, my new group of friends was a little bit different than my old one. We didn't scrapbook or roller skate. We made out and we experimented with drugs. This first entry is after I started eighth grade. October 12th, 1991. What a fucking badass year. And you know who makes it that way? Me. Oh, by the way, I smoked pot. Yeah. Weed, dope, ganja, Mary Jane. Yep. I did it and I love it. Talk about being fucking relaxed. Smoke this. We rolled our own. And Ashley bought it from some Ryan guy, and we went in her backyard and smoked it. I only had one joint. It was marvelous. Dude, I'm hooked on caffeine pills. Seriously, I can't live without them. A week ago or so, Cole, Mark, and Sean showed up at my house while they were all sniffing Scotchgard. April 25th, Alan and Clint came over today. We couldn't find anything to get high on. We can't get the Freon out of our air conditioner. We own no Scotchgard. We had no weed, only a clove cigarette. Dude, I'm gonna hopefully get stoned or drunk off my ass. I wanna do some acid. I wanna be on top of the world. That's my dreamland. But for some reason, I don't wanna die. Ever. Even the thought scares me. So in a way you could say that I would like to do drugs or actually have, but I want more, but I don't wanna die. Diary, I feel like you are my only true friend. Everyone else thinks I'm crazy. Linda and I are best friends, but I wish she did the same stuff I did, like getting high on Scotchgard. That was cool.
Not satisfied with simply taking substances, Brooke graduated to dealing them. Now, it's one thing to get mixed up with illegal activities, but it's another thing to turn it into a business. In fact, Brooke may be the first high school drug dealer who actually loved doing the bookkeeping.
I was always really good at math. You know, I was really good at figuring out how much and then weighing it out and figuring out your cost-profit ratio. And I would definitely say my studious side benefited me in lots of ways, from being able to keep my own accounting books to knowing how much of the product I was using versus selling. I was a nerdy drug dealer who pretended to be cool on the outside, but inside I like really harbored and loved the nerdy side of it.
And even into high school, Brooke continued to test the boundaries of right versus wrong, until eventually her quest to become the life of the party hit a fevered pitch.
So the highest point of my drug phase would be a girlfriend of mine decided to write some, cash out some checks on her dad's accounts. And we spent, I think it was 3 or 4 days, and we went through about $25,000, and we rented the top suites of every nice hotel in Dallas each night and threw amazing parties. And I don't think I've ever seen as much alcohol and drugs there in the rest of my life. Yeah, that was intense.
At 18, Brooke was arrested for check fraud and faced the reality of being tried as an adult. Though the charges were eventually dropped, the experience was enough to scare her straight.
I think life after drugs and partying at first did not seem like much of a party. I kind of went into this hermit phase and dedicated myself to academics again for a while. And then as I slowly came back out, I learned to moderate myself so I could still go out and have a really good time with friends, but not feel like I had to, you know, drop a couple tabs at X to have a good time.
The experience made her want to scare others straight too. Today, Brooke works for a nonprofit that helps rehabilitate teenagers who are behind bars. And her drug of choice? Oreo shakes at Chick-fil-A.
I think as I matured, that my idea of what a party was changed. It shifted. The concept of a party shifted.
Now, it would be impossible to talk about kids and crime and omit the most important aspect of all, punishment. Brooke managed to avoid serving time for her transgressions. But even though Phoebe's crimes were comparatively smaller, she didn't get off as easy, at least karmically. It began when her parents sent her to a summer camp in Minnesota.
I said a boom, chicka boom!
I said a boom, chicka boom!
I said a boom, chicka rocka, chicka rocka, chicka boom!
I said a boom, chicka rocka, chicka.
It was like prison. I spent 30 days in a living hell. Of course it wasn't a bad place. There was riding and sailing and footlong hot dogs and, you know, I mean, but to me, you know, it could have been like a Russian gulag, you know, I mean, like that didn't matter to me.
Desperate for a way out, Phoebe did what any prisoner does when locked up. She began writing letters, about 100 total.
I sent the letters to everyone, to my father and mother, my best friend's parents, who would call my mother and say, I think something's wrong, like I'm getting these letters from Phoebe. I guess my mother just stopped opening my letters. I think she just didn't want to hear it anymore. Oh God, July 12th. This one's like 6 pages long. There's an envelope here. The back of the envelope says, please save me. Here's another one. June 28th. Dear Dad, I really, really hate it here. I would rather die than be here. Please, please pick me up. My cabin is so mean to me. I only have one friend, which is Chloe. There's a girl in my cabin who's really mean to me. I cry every minute of the day because I hate it so much. June 29th, 1994. Dear Dad, You know, over the letters that I've written, that I'm miserable here. I cry every second of the day.
This is the worst place.
This is from July 1st. Dear Mom, I don't think that I will ever forgive you for sending me here. You're making me do this. I only have 6 days till I get out of here. Please, can we stop and get candy right after you pick me up? I love you, Phoebe Judge. I signed that one Phoebe Judge, which is pretty amazing.
Perhaps as the ultimate punishment, her parents shared the letters.
So my mother knew a columnist at the paper, and by that point, like, these had become so, like, wild and amazing that she was talking to her pals about it. And they said, this is a story, and it became a column.
Eventually, Phoebe's 30-day sentence ended. She would soon be reunited with Swedish Fish, the thing that got her mixed up with crime in the first place.
I had been through such a journey that at that point, I don't even know that I needed candy. You don't need the candy. You just need to know that you're never going back to a certain place. That was joy enough. That was, like, worth all the Swedish Fish in the world.
Turns out, even to a kid, the only thing better than candy is the sweet taste of freedom. But as Phoebe has learned over the years, there's really only one way for a criminal to truly reform themselves. At some point, you have to face the judge, or in this case, Mr. Judge.
Hello.
Hi, Dad.
Hello.
Hi, Dad.
Hi.
Well, I'm calling because I have a confession, and that is that I, when I was a little girl, I used to steal money from your pants in the morning while you were in the shower, and I did this for not just a couple of months, but it went on for a couple of years.
Oh, good heavens. Wait a minute. Are you telling me this now?
Did you have any suspicion that this could have been a possibility?
No, I have to say, it didn't occur to me that you might be a little thief, but I forgive you. I might be a rich man today, but for these pilferers. Why are you calling to tell me this?
Because...
Has your conscience been bothering you?
No, because...
And how much did you swipe?
Well, I always... it was, you never wanted to steal enough so that you might notice. I had to compete with Chloe, and so sometimes she would get in there first.
In total, how much do you think might have taken over however many years you were a crook?
If you had to add it all up. $200?
200.
I would say. 200. 200.
Well, maybe.
I'll pay you back sometime.
Well, no, but maybe you could really put your conscience to perfect rest if you'd buy me a really nice bottle of wine, or maybe a dozen of those really fancy golf balls, we could call it even. Okay?
All right, then we'll call it even.
And if you ever need any dough, just ask. But I thank you for this confession, I'm sure we all have one or two that we'd make if the circumstances were right.
And this concludes today's Look at Kid Criminals, where we learned the only real crime are people who pronounce burglar with three syllables.
Burglar, burglar, burglar. How do you say it? I do that with theater also. Theater and burglar.
All the childhood writings heard in today's episode are the real deal. No embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness. To share the shame, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Or visit GetMortified.com to learn about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of this series. As many of you know, the Mortified Podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, which is made possible with support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp, who celebrate creativity, chaos, and teamwork. Big thanks to AdZerk for providing their ad-serving platform to Radiotopia. If your company would like to support our podcast, we'd love it. Email sponsor@radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Paul Smith, Pooja Butt, Hadley Dion, Shelby Alatmani, Neil Ketcher, and myself, Dave Nadelberg. Today's episode features stories from Book Pilafont, Phoebe Judge, Sasha Rothschild, Alex Hewitt, and Adam Rubin story produced these for the stage. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, The Angel, Zoe Rose Palladino, and Snakes. Big thanks to Lauren Sporer, Lance Roberts Studios, and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you, we are freaks, we are fragile, and we survived.